This is December 14th, 2023. We are in Bedford, Massachusetts at the Edith Norse Rogers Memorial Veterans Hospital. And this tape is part of the Morse Institute Library's continuing Veterans Oral History Project. My name is Jim Ramsey. Our camera person is Maureen Sullivan. And we're very privileged to have with us today Leon Elmo Key. Welcome, Leon.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So, Leon, a little personal background first. May I ask when you were born?
June 17th, 1953, in Philadelphia, PA.
In Philadelphia. And how long did you grow up in Philadelphia?
I grew up until I was 11, and I moved to Massachusetts.
When you were 11?
11, yes.
Ah, I see. So, did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, my sister name is Joyce Farrable. I'll explain that later. James Farrable, Sylvia Farrable, and me, Leon Farrable.
So there were four of you?
Yeah, four of us.
I see. And you... So tell us a little bit about life growing up in Philadelphia. What was it like there then in the 50s?
In the 50s and 60s, Philadelphia was an industrial town, as you know, where transportation was a factor. We had a lot. It was very neighborly. You know what you talk about? We could go and open and leave our doors open. That's
yes.
The way it was.
Everything was open.
Everything
no keys,
was open.
No locks.
No keys. Everybody was friendly. And then things around late 50s, things started going a little bit more, how can I say it, unstable.
Right. So around 1964 or something like that, 11 years later, you moved to Boston.
I moved because my father was a Bostonian, Lucian Farrable.
I see.
I'm going to tell you why the names are different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I lied about my age, aka Farrable, because in the 60s, it was very violent. We had no rights. I was 13 years old, and I was a dishwasher at this school job. I went to Raymond's in downtown Boston to pick up, you know what, your high karate and your Old Spice.
Yes.
And your deodorant.
Yeah.
For to put in my locker because, you know what, you sweat. So, you know what, being a teenager, you want to smell good after you get off from work. Anyway, I'm walking in the aisle, and these two detectives, one came from behind, picked me up, threw me to the ground. A third one came and started kicking me. I said, what's going on? He said, don't say nothing. He called me the N-word. They took me into a back room, and they started asking me questions. I emptied my pockets. I had $56 in my pocket, and like I said, I was on my way to the restroom. And they handcuffed me, then somebody started punching on me. It was crazy. So there was a detective, a cop, kind of older fella. He kept trying to punch, he punched me in my eye so many times. So I thought my eye was going to pass out. I said to myself, this is it. I'm going to the military. I mean, because I didn't want to die, like I said, I don't want to die on the streets. And I'm going to die by a police officer, but by mistake, and I didn't. Because I was a smart kid. I went to school. My marks was A to B. I had a lot of support from my family. And I ended up in the military.
So basically, it was that experience that sort
yes,
of...
Yes, the trauma.
You were 13 then.
Yeah, I was 13. I enlisted at 14. Okay, I was supposed to come back after I graduated. Every Vietnam veteran, we got to go to our roots. I went to New Jersey to feed my family. I went to Philadelphia because I didn't want to go there and die or whatever, not knowing who I am.
So Leon Key, as opposed to Faribault, I think I didn't get it right.
Yes, okay.
So you changed your name.
I changed my name.
Okay.
To get into the service.
Okay.
Okay, because like I told you, the trauma that I suffered, I couldn't wait no longer. I said, look, I got to do something in my life. Because, no, it was not just that. Because, at 12 and 13, when I was in junior high school, the city of Boston used to, there was only five in Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan, and Jamaica Plain. There was only five super students, super smart students. I was one of the five.
Wow.
They used to pay us $150 an hour for all the school members from all the school districts. We used to sit down and explain to what could be done to stop the rioting, stop the insults from the students, the rattan, the beat. You know what? Our discipline was rattan and the paddle, and the tie wearing. We was implicated. We had them stop the ties. The pattern, all that, I felt that was involved in changing the schools, which I did, but.
So we'll get to that. Your military service in just a bit, but you basically enlisted early, but then you finished high school,
I
right?
Finished it. Yes.
Okay, so just a couple of more personal things, Leon.
Okay.
What is your marital status? Are you married now, or were you?
No, I'm a widowed. I was widowed twice.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry to hear that.
That's okay. In a bit.
Do you have children?
I have two kids. I have Altrenzo Key, who is 51.
Hmm.
My baby daughter, Iola Key, she's 50.
Okay.
My son's an artist like me. He's an artist. And my daughter's a real estate broker.
And you have grandchildren?
I have four beautiful grandchildren. I have Blaine. No, first let me start with the oldest. The oldest, Hebra, is my oldest. Then Blaine, who was 17. I have Charlie, who was 14. She's a female. And then I have Taryn, who is 10.
Wonderful, wonderful family. And currently,
I was blessed.
You were blessed. Good for you. currently, you're living here where we're interviewing you at the Bedford. At the Edith Norris Rogers Memorial Hospital. How long have you been here, Leon?
I've been in since 2000, and I got in January 2019.
Okay, so coming up on
4 years.
On 5 years.
5 years.
Okay. So moving now to your time in the service. You enlisted early in Boston, but you completed high school. And then you went into the service. So when was that you actually went on active duty?
Okay, back they started in 1968, I registered. They then gave me a year to finish school.
Okay, so
a year delay program.
Okay. By the way, out of curiosity, why did you decide to join? Did you want to join the Army? Did you consider the Navy or the Marines?
No, because my family, history, you know, all my family been in the Army.
You have an Army?
My grandfather was in the Revolution, after the Revolution War. My uncle was in the Army. I had one uncle in the Navy. That was my uncle, Nevy.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of them was Uncle Edward, who was in during the Korean War. He's got a plaque in Fort Benning about, because he was a hero in Korea, and he was a jump instructor.
Parachute.
And his parachute didn't open.
His parachute didn't open?
He jumped out when he was training. It never opened. So.
Oh, jeez.
So that was my mother's favorite. Then it was Uncle Bobby, who was in the Army. Uncle Johnny, he was also in the Army. Uncle Navy was in the Navy.
So you got a deep history of military service.
Yeah, basically we came up, and my family, we came up like the military.
Right.
You know, on Saturday you get up, you do your duties, you do your chores. Your mother inspect your room, make sure you can go out. It was, and also the guy's ready, whether we wanted to life.
Now, in 1969, 68, you signed up, but then you mm-hmm. went to school. Vietnam was hot and heavy at that time.
Well, I never paid attention to the news.
Huh.
Because being a young kid,
sure.
News, we out having fun. We out working. We out going and studying. my parents that way. I mean, the grown-ups, would do that. But we was kids. I'm going to play. I'm going to see a girlfriend. I'm going out to do some study in library. I mean.
Did you, when you signed up, did you do so with any friends or anything? Or was this just you on your decision?
It was me on my decision. I had to keep everything secret. Because, like I said, if I'm 14 years old, none of my friends wanted to go in the military with me. Because they too busy at home trying to figure out what to do.
Right.
But I was mature. I mean, maybe I'm a prodigy, maybe I was special. But I knew I had enough. And plus, we didn't have equal opportunities. We never had blacks in America. We had no civil rights. We had no equal opportunity. Over the past, we never got our props.
This was a very turbulent time in Boston, right?
Oh, man.
For racial.
School busing began in 1964. Now, it started off as a volunteer program. Man, my mother had nerve to volunteer me to go to South Boston. I went. But because I never understood prejudice. I never understood hate. What's hate? But when I went to South Boston, I understood that there was a difference. But they're kids. They don't know hate unless they taught that.
Yes.
I mean, they respected me because I was a person to speak out and I fight. I had no problem. But I tell you, when I finally decided I wasn't going to school no more, it was Thanksgiving vacation. And see, we had passed to get on the bus. Bus was taken. There's no school bus at that time. The drivers on the bus, on the MBTA, were shedding students in the door. When people come around the corner, rocks and sticks, they wouldn't let them on the bus. I told my mother that I'm not going back no more. And you know what? With that, turned around with another thing. I said, yo, man, if I go in this service, and believe it or not, I'm glad I did.
Yep, that's good for you.
Because I scored very high.
So you enlisted, this was, I think you said...
I enlisted?
September 69.
I went in September of 69.
Right, okay. After high school.
Right after high school.
And where did you went to basic training,
I went
guess.
To Fort Dix, New Jersey.
Fort Dix.
Company C, 1st Battalion, and Charlie Company.
Okay, So basic training. What did you think of basic training? How'd you make out with that?
Well, you know what? And when I first started, I thought I was in shape. Until you know what? I think we all just thought that. The first one PT was hard. I scored low. I scored like maybe 2-something. The second one, I did 450. Because they gave us incentives. Incentive. If you score 450, you can eat chow first. That's worth it.
So you
and I pumped it. I scored 450, and you know what? It wasn't too many of us that did that. I get chow, see you in line. It's cold outside. I go right up the chow line. Now imagine, because I went in the service in wintertime.
Winter,
so man, you stand out chow. Man, I went right through the town.
So you made it through boot camp. What was that, like a 6-week?
8 weeks.
8 weeks.
8 weeks.
Now,
I scored 486 in my final.
486.
Almost max, 486.
Wow. And so was that the end of your training, or did you
No, I went to 2 AITs, 3 AITs at Fort Dix.
Now, what's
AIT is Advanced Infantry Training.
Advanced infantry training. Uh-huh.
I went to lineman school, wireman school.
What's lineman and wireman?
That's stringing wires. Say, for instance.
Like between telephone, like electric poles?
Yeah. Then I went to switchboard operating school, which switchboards were still in effect at that time.
So how did you happen to get into this communications thing or this?
My scores on my test scores. Okay.
So you had aptitude.
Aptitude. They gave me 28 years of education. So my IQ was very high.
So you, and that's really what got you into the Signal Corps.
Yeah.
The Signal Corps in the Army. Would you tell a little bit of what's
the
job
Corps
of the Signal
the main, Corps?
The
Signal Corps is the main main thing that the Army functioned on. Without communication, you couldn't run this world. You couldn't run, run the VA at all.
So Signal
without
Corps
telephones,
is...
without telephones, without switchboards, without linemen, wiremen, cablemen. It's impossible to have a telephone.
So Signal Corps does all the communications.
Does all the communications, all the satellite. We have the day, all the computers. All that comes from the military.
And I think
you start off basics from the ground up. I started from the ground up.
So you had the aptitude for this. You did some training at Fort Dix, and then you also went to another
advanced
place.
Advanced training at Fort Gordon.
Fort Gordon,
Fort
where?
Fort Gordon, Georgia.
Georgia.
As the Signal Corps, where your crypto, they got everything there. It's old.
Crypto. So what's crypto?
Crypto is computers, where information goes in. We put out one information and it changes 10 times before it comes out with the original first.
So this is to keep it secret?
Yeah. And it's computers, basically. Back then, the military, we call it crypto. It was computers. Okay, I had to learn the code.
So this binaries. Was early, this was
60s, early 70s.
There were, these were early computers.
These were big monsters. These were big boys.
Right.
And it scared me at first because, as you know, I had paranoia because I had told a lie about my age. So I know... They knew how old I was. There's no, come on, you can't fool the computer. Yeah. But I didn't pay no attention. But I stayed away from it because I didn't truly understand. Being young, I understood. I said, wait a minute. You mean to tell me all the things that's going on in this world, and they can find out anything about anybody in 5 to 10 minutes?
Right.
That was amazing. And I think back in the 60s, it scared anybody. Then I went to... Again, I went to telephone installation school, lineman school, advanced lineman, wireman. I went to combat, the situations, and Vietnam training.
Just one second. Let me take it a little more slowly.
Okay.
So by the time you finished at Fort Gordon,
yeah.
Was that kind of the end of your training?
Yes.
Okay, and at that point, what was your rating or your rank? What were you called?
My spec 4.
And spec 4, what was it called?
Specialist.
Specialist. A specialist.
E4, called E4.
But was it lineman and wireman or what?
It's special forces. You can't name. You wear infantry is one thing. Signal Corps is what you call special forces.
Okay.
Special units that go to do special jobs.
Right. So you were a spec 4. Okay. And so where'd you go after Fort Gordon? Vietnam?
I went to Vietnam.
Okay. So.
But any events happened before that. May I elaborate a little bit?
Of course.
Okay. When 1969. I came home on Christmas leave. I left the base in November, around the 9th, 8th of November.
69.
Yeah. And I got sick. I got lost down south for about 3 weeks. I caught the wrong bus. I had a girlfriend that went to I had a girlfriend at that time she went to Durham Business School. She lived in Pendleton, North Carolina. So on my route to try to find, when I finally located where I was, I had her come to Virginia. I made it to Virginia, all around the South. I went all around it. Being from the North, you don't know nothing about the South.
Mm.
And it's scary because, like you said, the stuff on TV, how they was doing things to us. it scared me, so I was very careful what I did. I finally got home. I went to her house for a week with her mother and father. I catch another bus, railway bus, come to Boston. I'm working. Every time I came home for leave, I worked. I had a job. Matter of fact, back then they had a place called Handy Andy, where you could get a daily job. Work a job, they pay you that day, so forth and so on. That's what I did. I was a real worker, hustler. So I came home, I worked in a dye plant. All of a sudden, something happened. I started burning fevers, 102, 103. I had no answers. So I still try to make it back. You know what? We try to make it back to our base. I couldn't. I went to Peter Van Brigham. They told me that I had something like hyper eosinophilia syndrome. I don't know what it is. They had no name for it. It was like a cell. A red cell was hiding their white cells or something. Mm-hmm. I was paralyzed later. I was paralyzed 3 days later. God was with me. So anyway, they gave me steroids. Mounds of it, I guess, back in the 60s, that's all we had for it. If you had a disease, steroids, the best treatment for you back in the 60s.
Now, but at some point, did you get back to Fort Gordon? Or
I got back to Fort Gordon 4 months later, five months later.
Wow. Okay.
I finished my training.
Yep.
And they gave me a 30-day leave. Mm-hmm. I graduated in April.
April of 1970.
1970. My orders came down.
And what did the orders say?
They go Vietnam, long been a Vietnam, report.
And so
on my birthday.
That's when you got your orders?
I got it May. I had 30-day leave. And so they said June the 17th is my birthday.
So happy birthday, Leon.
I landed in Vietnam on my birthday. You believe that?
So you landed, where did you come into?
I came in Long Bend.
Tell us, so what unit were you assigned to in Long Bend?
I was with the telephone operation unit. Telephone operation unit.
Okay. And you told me at one point, it's a little complicated. It's the 160th signal group?
I went to the 160th group. The biggest. Okay, Long Bend is like, it's huge. The biggest base in Vietnam. It has everything. You know, has that own airport. Had MACV, general quarters. They had the biggest MASH unit. It was a large base, very large.
So it was a big base, and it was.
But it was and the communications were had to be maintained. It was like a little city.
Was Long Bend kind of the communications hub for Vietnam?
Yes, the main hub.
I mean, Long Bend is not far from
Saigon, 19 miles from Saigon.
Okay, so it's close to that area.
And part of MACV Corps, Third Corps.
And at this point, you were a Spec 4?
Yes.
And you were with, ultimately...
I'm with the 53rd Aviation Unit. We trained, because we were supporting units, so whatever was needed. Specialties, we went out with the one, I was with the one the 105th, 9th, the 1st of the 9th, the 53rd Aviation Unit. And the first of the calf, not long, like a week here, a week there, 2 weeks there.
So you were with Company C, I think you said. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. First Battalion.
Okay. So, and were you part of a smaller unit?
Wait a minute. No, it was like.
Oh, please.
Point. Our unit, we had movies. They treated us more or less like we was in Vietnam. We had to have, our clothes had to be sharp all the time.
Yeah.
Shoes shine, because we was going to different units. We was going to officers' quarters. We was going to different units, and we had to always be presentable.
You would be going from Long Bend out to other units?
Other units. But we'd had to be, we had to always show respect and honor. It's weird. It was like that. I belonged to a telephone company.
You were like Ma Bell.
Ma Bell, right? You got it. Ma Bell, where we we had to be presentable at all times.
So when you went out to one of these other units, this was like an Army unit, an infantry?
They could be nasty, dirty, just come in off the fields, but we had to be always dressed.
And so what would you do? Would you describe a particular assignment that you and your group were involved in?
Yeah, there was an attack up in Da Nang. And now they never told us that they just got attacked or whatever. They just said communications needed. We want you to check out the communications, see what we need, how many men we're gonna need, and what the problem is. We go up there, now we dressed like you and me, but we had our fatigues, was all green, and these gentlemen were like, wow. Beat down, no shaving. It's like they lost. I never seen people so dislocated mentally. And being where long been, we never seen any of that. So to us, it was like, wow.
So was this an infantry unit or something?
An infantry unit. See, in all infantry units, they have the same thing.
Right.
They have communication. But the man, you know what, I hate to say it, but if they out in the field and everything, they don't know what we know.
Oh, of course.
Because our minds are set in a different thing.
So what would you do for them? Did you
I would tell them, I would comfort them, and I would say, what's the problem? You got a communication problem? Oh, yeah, this is down. We go to switchboards, we check the radios. They need us to instruct them on things. They're ready to get burned up. We bring supplies up to them. And we teach them how to work supplies, the supplies we bring up, the crypto, the telephone communication system.
So did you fly in a helicopter from Long Bend to Da Nang?
Yeah, Da Nang. I was in Cambodia too. Nobody knew we were supposed to be up in there.
What'd you do in Cambodia?
We had to set up communications. Okay, prior to going up into Cambodia, you have to send observers up to set up communications.
So you're kind of in the lead. I mean, you have to have communication.
We have to have communication, and we set up bases up there. You have a unit. Like sometimes we have these machines, these big, I don't forgot the name of them. But we had 10 air conditioning units up there that set up a base of communications.
Right.
And we have to man those.
So as a spec, did you have people working for you?
I had my own crew. I had a four-man crew. You know what? It wasn't that what rank you are is your capabilities and all. I mean, everybody think a sergeant, but a spec four. I had a sergeant train me in Vietnam. When I first got there, George, his name was Sergeant George. He trained me, and then after he trained me for a month, I qualified to get my own crew. I had a crew of four men.
Four men, and so your crew.
I trained them to do my job.
You trained them to do job, and then your crew went out to.
Went out to all areas
solve
to train
problems.
Whoever they need to train. It's weird how it goes. I wasn't a person that was always in combat because I was intelligent. They don't send intelligent people out to die.
You were supporting the combat forces, but
every now and then I would get in a firefight. I'd be scared shitless now. Don't get me wrong, but I was never trained infantry. I was not trained. My job was not. Right. Trained to kill. My job was trained to support.
I mean, you had infantry training in boot camp.
Yeah, I'll kill you now. I killed a lot of people, though. But it wasn't because that's my job, because you won't kill me, I'm going to kill you first.
So you got there in May of 1970.
And I went back to school. I got there in June on my birthday. I went back to school.
Back to school in Long Bend?
In Long Bend, that's right.
More school.
It got me in school.
School. A lot of training in the Army.
Yes, because you know what? Then I had to learn. Now, stateside is one thing. Going in combat is different. They have to train you for how they do things, what they expect, and what could happen if you don't do this. Now, believe me, I'm up in the air. Now, you ask me, was I crazy? I don't know. I used to climb 90-foot poles to string wires.
90-foot poles?
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know whether I was insane.
You were kind of a sitting duck up there, weren't you?
Yeah, but you know what? You don't think that. You're just doing your job. I mean, dedication is one thing. And I was dedicated to my job.
You're also a young man.
Saving troops. And saving troops. I mean, I can watch out for my buddy.
Right.
And whatever you had to do, you don't think, and I think back, was I nuts?
Part of a team.
You know, you're part of a team. That's where I learned teamwork. That's where you learn teamwork, buddies, and what a buddy is.
So,
we never can have that in America. This is the only place I found the same camaraderie ship is in here, in Bedford. And most veterans, we look for that coming up in life, and
right.
We get older.
Well, it sounds like you had a great variety of work. I mean, every problem was a little different.
Yeah,
must have been.
It was never, you know what, and that's what I think that got me who I am today. It was seeking a problem.
Problem solving.
I wasn't, no problem the same, especially electronics and especially in Vietnam, because you know what, most people, if you heard stories you heard, most people train a certain training and they never use it.
Right.
But I was fortunate that I got to use it.
So Leon, basically 4 or 5 months later, in November of 1970, something happened. Would you tell us a little bit about what happened on what November 17th?
November the 17th. As I explained earlier, we went up there in April. We set up communications. And we were supposed to go up there with the first and the ninth, and we went up there. And we was walking. We don't know the location, I don't even know. They never told us. All of a sudden, we heard something. And I'm carrying the radio, and I held up. I looked around, I waved to my man. We held up. We didn't hear nothing. We walked further. And now we have with the radio man, there's a guy with a M60, and the M60, another guy's holding the rounds. All of a sudden,
M60 machine gun.
M60. You always have an M60. All of a sudden, fire started. The people started shooting from everywhere.
People on the U.S.
Charlie,
troops.
I'm Charlie.
Viet Cong.
Viet Cong started shooting. We fell to the ground. We started trying to figure out where the fire was coming from. They told me, Key, go up on the, go over there behind that tree and get up there. I didn't call our coordinates out. I ran up.
Was this just just your team, or did you have infantry with you?
It was like 38 of us. I stood up, I went to the mountain, somebody shot at me, and I flung my radio back. I got hit here. Okay. As I fell, I called my coordinates. I knew my coordinates were. I called them out, and that's all I remember.
Your coordinates?
Coordinates where my location is.
You called them into the radio?
Into the radio.
To get help?
To get the Cobra. I remember the Cobra coming in.
A Cobra gunship?
A Cobra gunship.
Helicopter?
No, this is a gunship.
I mean, a very potent.
It had 48 rockets on each side of it. It had a minigun that can cover a baseball field in 1 minute.
So you called in so basically there were 30, were you pinned
down?
There
was 30. We was all around. We got caught, what you call it, a horseshoe. If anybody know what a horseshoe is?
Yes.
Okay. We got into the center of the horseshoe. So we may have got hit by our own fire, friendly fire. We just don't, you know what? We know three of us came out, and me and two other, my friends, George, and I think James came out. We're the only ones told me who came out of there. They never tell you the dead, but you know the dead. All I know, man, is like it was just fire.
And you were wounded.
I was out. I thought I was dead. That's where I woke up. And so I thought I was it.
So there was a medevac situation?
I was medevaced out of there. I went to Saigon. From Saigon, I went to Camp Zama, Japan.
So Saigon, was there a hospital there that you
There's a Saigon hospital where they patch you up. And then they, if you need surgery, wherever you have to go, they send you. Or you go home.
So you're, if I may ask, I mean, you're, so you took several rounds.
I took one hit. I took one hit in the back.
One hit, like in your back or?
Up here.
Okay.
Because see, I don't know whether it's a blessing or not. When I swung my radio, that's what it was aiming for. So when I swung it, went down, that's what got me.
They were aiming for the radio. The radio out.
That's communications.
Because that's the without the radio, you're
that's the communications.
You're dead, huh?
But you know what?
But you were able to call in help.
I was able to get my corneas out. After that, I don't know anything.
And at that point, so
I blanked.
So you went to Saigon, and then you went to Japan.
Yeah, I went
hospital.
To Camp Zama. You know, I didn't get home till 3 months later.
How many?
3 months, 2 months, or 2 or 3 months. And I got November. I didn't get back to the United States until like January.
From Japan?
From Japan.
And where did you go when you, what?
I went to Chelsea Naval.
Chelsea Naval Hospital.
Yeah, I went to Fort Cutler Hospital in Fort Devens. From the Cutler Hospital, they sent me to nearest place to where I enlisted at.
Okay.
And that was in Chelsea.
And how long were you in Chelsea?
4 months, 5 months.
Wow. So your total hospitalization was what, half a year or a year?
Yeah, half a year. Yeah, about a half a year, over half. And then that's not bad. After I got out, I was transferred to VA. And they had to figure out what was, you know what, there was a lot of problems. So they had, and I was in there. Boy, shit. All my life, just about. I was in a VA hospital, I arrived in the VA hospital, I believe in June. I didn't get out. I was there every day. I was a patient, inpatient. I went home on a weekend visit. For this, I had about 3 to 5 years.
At the VA in Boston?
Yeah, in Boston, at JP, 3 to 5 years.
Jamaica Plain.
For the first 10 years, sir, since 1982 was when I was exactly free to go out on my own, because number one, my injuries, my mental, and see the blood disease I had was cancer. They treated me, okay, let me go back. In 1972, I was treated I had chemo twice for cancer. They gave me chemo in 72, again in 74. For my blood condition. You know what, sir? The military never tell you what you got. They never tell you what is about. They say you need this because how I was feeling, vomiting, it was a cancer. But they never told you. I'm pretty sure you know that. You're in many stories. They don't tell you.
Right.
I just wanted to stay alive.
But you had a lot of medical problems to take care
of. Physical, no, it was that, and I had to go to report monthly for my retirement.
So you were you in a reserve unit after you?
After I came home, I had to register for the reserves.
And what did you do in?
Same thing, communications.
You did communications.
I did communications.
So you had a day job.
Yeah, day job, and then I worked for the my job. So you got the job history. When I came home, I was hired by the telephone company.
Of course.
Right. I worked out of Bragdon Street office.
Is that New England Telephone?
Yeah, New England Telephone. That's it. Then I wanted to further my knowledge, so I started going to school at Ritz Electronics School. That was on Commonwealth at Ritz. Mm-hmm. I was a technician. I fixed TVs, stereos, amplifiers. I worked for Cloth Videos, doing it big screen TVs at that time. Mm-hmm. I was Tech One.
Hmm.
I did a lot. I worked for Radio Shack. I was Tech One at Radio Shack.
Radio Shack.
Yeah, I did a lot. Tech Hi-Fi. I worked for Tech Hi-Fi. So I kept moving.
But then at the same time, you were in the reserves.
I was in
the
reserves.
You were telling me they called you from time
to
time for crypto problems.
Yeah, from time to time, crypto problem, communication problem.
So what?
I could, because, sir, I had some ability of electronics. I had ability, I don't understand it, but they called me to fix this problem. Or, Key, what do you think of this? Or, what do you think of that? I never thought of myself better than anybody else, put it that way. I just did my job. If you need me, and I'm good at something, I help you. It's crazy. Because I never thought of myself as being better. And I think that keeps you level, on the, keep you on level ground.
Right, even keel.
Keep you heel, man. So you don't forget where you come from. Because but there was trouble times too. It wasn't all glamour. I mean, I went through identity crisis of drugs in the 70s. As a matter of fact, when I came home from Vietnam, I had 6 months, and then I stopped. Because I was confused. I come home from Vietnam, I'm promised. They say to me, when you go to Vietnam, whatever, they're supposed to hold your job for you. At that time, I worked for Liberty Mutual.
Liberty Mutual.
Stock control.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of my fields, so I always loved stock control. So when I left there thinking all the time that I'm going to get my job when I come home. It never happened. I get home, they say, oh, no, we don't know nothing about this. And so you still have to live, especially most of our records don't follow us. Our pay records don't follow us a lot.
Hmm.
So here I am. I'm living with my mother. I come home, I'm doing with my mother, my father, and my sister. No money, so you know what? Not just that, I had to also be a kid. And remember that I'm not grown yet, I'm still a kid. So I had to try, even though I couldn't hang with the kids I grew with, but I was around them trying to, you know what? It's a secret. Because
you've got a secret.
I got a secret.
Right.
And the country
share.
Don't like our secrets. Because the news, betrayed by the news, they said to us, we are baby killers. You're murderers. So how could I say I'm a Vietnam veteran? It's like, plus my age, plus how I looked. I looked like a kid. But
you were a man.
I was a man. But you know what? The law is crooked. Because you know what? You're a man, you can die, but you can fight a war, but you can't come home and be a man. You can't go to the bar, you can't drink, you can't have fun.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But anyway, I did some crazy stuff. I altered I had driving license in the military. I altered my birth on my on my things. So I go to the bar, other teenagers.
You figured out a way.
Yeah, I mean, we teenagers, you do crazy, you do. So it got kind of difficult because my parents needed, you know, they said, wait a minute, you know what? They thought you're lying about you not getting paid because, you know, they don't understand the military, face it. So you're struggling to be a teenager. You're struggling to work. You don't get no job because now your brain is in two places. I'm in the military. What do I do? It was tough. So I took the drinking and then runs in the nights. It runs in the days. And my mother told me, she said to me, you need help. I listened to my mother. You know, I always listen. Mama never lies. She looked in, when I first got home, she looked in my eyes. She said, what have they done to my baby? And I heard her voice in my head because I was doing some crazy things. I was running all night. I was hanging out all night doing crazy stuff. And I came, and her voice came in my head a year later. I started getting help mentally. Because here I'm thinking I'm all right until people started coming telling me, did you know you threatened that guy last night? You pulled a gun out? I'm saying, me? But that was how I was trained. You know what? We are animals. And Vietnam made us animals. But how do you put the animal back in you?
How do you get out of the animal out of you?
You have to, it took a lot, you know what? But you have to want it. And I said, wait a minute. I had to go to a psychiatrist who was black. Because he can relate to me. He can relate to the, just the struggle itself. But to unravel the anger, not taking it out on, taking it on myself rather than taking it out on people whom I supposed to hate or people who did this to me. I said, no. So what? He took me all the way back to childhood. You know what he said? 73, I'll never forget this. He said, look, PTSD didn't start in Vietnam. It started when you was a baby. I asked him how. He said, simply, your mother, who knows how to raise a first child or child? There are no books on it. I started thinking, yeah, you're right. That allowed me to go backwards and try to go for it inch at a time. Because it took my mind off of this and put me here. And I had to think about that. Well, it wasn't easy. I had to get hypnotist because I was having pain, real bad pain.
Well, yeah, you were dealing with some significant medical issues.
Oh, man. And I'm glad that, you know what? Normally, I didn't take the pain out of nothing. As a record I used to listen to, Marvin Gaye, it says when the pain starts. But he was talking about drugs. You know what? The pain, and I said, wait a minute. But the words, as soon as night, the pain begins. And at nighttime, being young, I didn't know that. Pains hit at night. Pain gets worse at night. I don't get, and it did. And you know what, that song stayed in me, and every time it'd be in my head, as soon as night, the pain starts. And sometimes you have to wake up to it. And I said, wait a minute. So I started educating my mind and feeding it, not drugs. I went to the alcohol battle, but you know what? I was never a drinker. Herb, yes. I'm an herb head. I smoke a lot of herb now. But it was a sense of something else was wrong. Like I said, I'm going through chronic pain. No one can tell me the pain. So is it the pills I'm taking or what? It was crazy. A mass confusion. You know, but I stumbled forward. I did a lot of things. I went to school. I went to Microsoft. I went to the VA to the program, the rehabilitation program. And I went there and they made me, I went to BU. I went to Microsoft, graduated from there. I went to, like I said, RTCS, Rets. That's where I had my own TV shop, record shop. I had my home. I bought my own first home. And I was in my 20s. So I had a good life. Even though what should have, could have, didn't, I forced the issue. Because it was a will where my mother and father did not raise me to be less than who I am, who they are. You know what I mean? So sometimes that keeps you going. It's the thought of your parents and your sisters and brothers. I never told you who my sister is. Joyce Farable, she's a columnist for the Herald. She has been writing for 50 years, journalist for 50 years.
Joyce?
Farable.
Okay.
Also, she was married. She's married to Bruce Bolin, who's
Bruce Bolin.
The first black senator.
Yes.
Okay. Bruce Bolin Jr. is my nephew. My mother, my mother retired from Raytheon after 30 years. My little
Raytheon.
Yes, Sciola Farable. Sylvia Farable also retired at Raytheon after 35 years. Her husband also retired at Raytheon after being here 35 years. So we have a good background of succeeding. We've been in the revolutionary, trying to get civil rights in the 60s. We're still fighting that today. Bruce Bolin Sr. had a building built in Roxbury called the Bruce Bolin Building, where his son just graduated, my nephew from law school. And 2 years ago, he graduated from BU Law at 26. He's now trying to run his father, do that, and he's going into politics sooner or later.
Quite a family.
Yeah.
A wonderful family.
Yeah, so you know.
And a wonderful story.
It comes from being in the struggle, not being racist, prejudiced. You know what? We make our own destiny.
And you made yours.
And yes, you need help doing it.
You got to have help along the way.
Yeah, but it's that type of help, good help.
So.
And listening ear, you have to listen.
I guess I just want to say thank you for sharing all these reflections. I guess kind of winding up here, a few questions for you to reflect on your service in the military.
Okay.
So how important to you was serving in the military, in the Army?
It was one of the most important things I have done. It was a decision I made, and I made the best of the decision. And the Army helped me make the best of it by applying.
Because it obviously affected your life.
Great, immensely. You know what? That question is right. Then I wondered to myself, what else would I be if I didn't go?
Hmm.
That's a hell of a, but I never regret it. Because.
Wonderful.
And my daughter's a real estate broker. My son's an artist. My kids are healthy. You know what? It was a good decision.
Oh, by the way, and you're an artist too.
Yes.
We haven't talked about that, but you have all kinds of skills, including art.
I have. You know what? Because being different in the world, born different, you have to have skills instead of hate. Skills take up the hate because you don't have time.
Skills take up the hate.
Yes.
Hmm. So looking back on it all, was there a, can you share with us from your time in the your active duty time, is there a memorable experience, a memorable character or person, you know, something humorous?
One of the miracles when my last PT test, where I never imagined almost matching it.
Oh, you mean at boot camp?
Boot camp. I mean, whoever, you know what, the only, being 14 away from a 500.
Oh, 500 is the max?
500, score 500 is the max.
Ah, that's important to understand for your.
You know what?
And you were at 480, 486.
486. That's remarkable. Even I couldn't believe it. The only thing I didn't run on time was the mile. If I had a max a mile, but you know what? It's funny, Owens, Owens, a cross-country runner from Massachusetts. I didn't know who he was. I'm running him. And I'm trying to keep pace with him.
Cross-country, oh, okay.
Owens, he's the one in the one that was the marathon, one of the first or second marathons.
Sure.
Yeah, but I didn't know who he was. I was trying to keep pace with him. That way I blew it. And the next memorable moment, in Vietnam, when I had my crew, and I was training them so well that when I was going to leave, they cried because they didn't want me to leave because they said, we need you. And I said, wow. That, and within itself, where they're white now, mind you, and they looked at me like I was their father. Don't leave us. We need you. That's the most memorable part. Because you never know how well a job you've done
right.
Until somebody says, no, we still want you here. But I got injured. No, we want you here. It's crazy.
That's a great.
That's the most memorable.
That's a wonderful memory
yeah.
To carry with you.
And it stays with me.
Well, Leon, this you've shared much with us.
Thank you. That's a
lot. Is there anything else that?
No, I like to say that regardless to what's going on in this country, in the wild and rural world, these kids need to at least give something to our country for 2 years or more, because it brings out your character, it brings responsibility, and you don't have to worry about mom and dad. You don't have to think about them holding you up and depending on them. It teaches responsibility and the ability to meet friends from all nature, all nationality, and you become bonded. You can only bond in your neighborhood, but you have to bond all over the world. And I think they need to learn that. College is so much, but you need to get away and give your country back something before you go. In other countries, they do it. We need to start doing it. And everybody hates the draft.
It's a job.
I think that we need it. It's not a job, it's an adventure.
And on that note, thank you, Leon
thank you.
Elmo Key,
thank
for
you,
a great interview.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you for allowing
me. Thank you.